from the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Let me tell you some about our guest this hour. He is a multimedia pioneer. He is a prolific writer. He's part hard-nosed news hound, part enlightened mystic, part carnival barker. He is a world traveler who has investigated every kind of weirdness you can imagine and plenty that you cannot imagine. And he also is the publisher of one of my favorite publications. It's Conspiracy Journal, The Bizarre Bazaar. And I love reading this thing because, to me, it's kind of like time traveling back to the 1950s and stumbling on some curiosity shop below the sidewalk. And you enter to find some eccentric guy who's telling you all of the twisted details about what's happening behind reality, blurring the line between fact and fiction before selling you some magical spells, some magical charms, maybe an immortality kit, yes, maybe even a wishing machine. And in the latest issue of Conspiracy Journal, The Bizarre Bazaar, here is what he says about himself. I started out pretty young as a publisher. At age 14, I'd saved enough to go out and purchase a mimeograph machine and started putting out the Interplanetary News Service Report, which started out as a tiny zine and soon grew into a 50-page publication with a circulation as large as the prestigious, for its day, APRO Bulletin. Over the years, I have written, co-authored, and edited over 200 books on everything from rock music to the MJ-12 documents. I've been a stringer for the national tabloids such as The Inquirer, The Star, and The Globe, and editor of over 30 different magazines. My longest-running effort was the newsstand publication UFO Universe, which went for 11 years. Today, I preside over Inner Light Global Communications, and I'm editor of The Conspiracy Journal and Bizarre Bazaar. I've been a regular contributor to Fate Magazine for over 40 years, and more recently to Open Minds Magazine. Furthermore, I'm one of the few Americans ever invited to speak before closed-door meetings on UFOs presided over by the late Earl of Clancarty at the House of Lords in England. Please note, you can read the story of my sojourn across the British Isles in a forthcoming edition of UFO Today, a new online publication. Oh, and let's not forget that I had one of the first metaphysical centers in the country, the New York School of Occult Arts and Sciences. For years, I successfully organized numerous New Age festivals. And while I've cut back some, I'm still very busy doing radio and television like Coast to Coast AM, William Shatner's Weird or What, and the soon-to-be-aired Mysteries of National Parks on the Travel Channel. And if you haven't tuned in already, you can catch me in the second Sunday of every month at 9 p.m. Pacific Coast time when I co-host, along with Tim Swartz and Michael Mott, Outer Edge Radio. As you can tell, he very well could be truly the most interesting man in the world. He's known by many different names, but most people call him Mr. UFO. Timothy Green Beckley, welcome, sir, back to Speaking of Strange.
Well, you know, Josh, you make that sound so exciting. it's a true resume, and I left out half the stuff, but I don't mean to toot my own horn. Honk, honk. But, yeah, glad to be on. Glad to be on. I only wish I were down there with you in Puerto Rico doing it live instead of here in these sweltering, mean streets of New York City.
Yeah, oh, I tell you, I'm loving it down here. And, of course, there's a major UFO flap going on right now, and we're definitely going to talk some about the dark side of UFOs. Yeah, there really is. But let me ask you a big question right off the bat here, Tim, because there's so much we could talk about.
Your friend and colleague, and perhaps I should say even mentor, Jim Moseley, he passed away several years ago.
Yes.
And I had the pleasure of traveling down to Key West, Florida, and spending an afternoon at his house drinking scotch and hearing stories about the golden age of ufology. In fact, I recorded one of the last, possibly the last, video interview that he did. And Tim, I know you're a guy who appreciates the morbid. So when you have a friend like him who passes away and you face your own mortality, as we all must do eventually, if you were to drop dead tomorrow, after all the stuff that you have done, what would you want to tell all of our listeners tonight about what you have learned, what is happening in this thing called reality?
Wow. Can you throw a tougher question at me? Well, I have spent my entire life looking for answers. Now, a lot of people in the paranormal and in UFOs particular, they claim that they have the answers. I've always been skeptical of anybody who maintains that whatever claims that they propose are the only ones out there. I think there are many facets to our reality, and we're only perhaps becoming more aware of them in this so-called New Age, because there is a fascination with some of these topics, or a lot of these topics now. There are probably more shows on the Internet and on the radio and TV devoted to this. I mean, there was nothing back when I was growing up. We had, of course, Long John Neville. Now, he was the master storyteller, and I would, at the age of 10 or 11, I would sit there at night instead of going to sleep, because I had to get up early in the morning and go to school, and listen with my little transistor radio to all these incredible stories about people who claimed that they went to other planets, and people who traveled outside of the body, and people who lived in the houses that they said were haunted. And this fascinated me. And I guess it was because of Long John that I kind of began my search into the realms of the bizarre. And also I had quite a few experiences, growing up. My grandfather supposedly saw a headless horseman behind the barn in Kentucky. My life was saved by, well, let's say a guardian angel. When I was 3 or 4 years old, I used the term guardian angel because I don't know what else to call in this particular case, how else we could identify what had happened to me. And I lived in a house that was haunted, and I saw my first of 3 UFOs when I was 10 years old. So I was kind of primed for this at the get-go. What I have come to believe is that there are many different realities out there, and we have to choose our own path to knowledge and information. And that's what I've tried to do. And I think I've learned a bit along the way. But most of all, I've tried to share this information with others. I think that has kind of been my task here, is to get out there and partake of what information that I have and what other people have shared with me and pass it on. And I hope when I leave the immortal coil that's what I'm remembered for, is my ability to share the information and let people decide for themselves what they should accept and should not accept.
So, Tim, do you get the feeling that we are being observed and have been observed for perhaps eons by beings in other realms, and that they are simply waiting until humans evolve enough to open their minds and understand more about these other dimensions before they sort of become more pronounced in our lives, and that we're starting to see that happen right now?
Well, that's an explanation or a theory. Now, I don't know as if they are able to do that. If they were able to land on the White House lawn, perhaps they would have done that 4 or 5 decades ago. They haven't. I've kind of lost the faith in the idea that these craft and their occupants are from outer space. I think the phenomena here is much more closely related to our own planet and our own energies. And even though they can take on what appears to be physical form, we know that they are shapeshifters. I mean, they're able to disguise themselves pretty much upon the command. After all this time, we really have no inkling as to where these beings and these craft are actually coming from. Now, it could be that they've been visiting here from somewhere else since the beginning of time, as you point out. It could be another theory, which I hold to, is that they might have actually even created us. We could be somebody's lab experiment, some guinea pigs, cosmic guinea pig, if it were. Or it could be something entirely different. There could be more than one group or more than one race of beings that are coming here, and so they all have their own motives, and they all have an idea in mind, or perhaps they have no idea in mind. One of the theories that I've come across recently that I kind of go for is that this is some sort of intelligence that can create illusions, can manifest itself in many forms, but they are unable to actually appear to us in their true shape and size. Now, I think that, you know, I've been involved quite a bit lately in the research and a lot of personal experiences as far as coincidences and synchronicities go. And I believe that synchronicities are the new EVP. Just like crop circles, they're trying to tell us something. Now, what it is that you're trying to tell us, I think perhaps is just pretty fundamental that they do exist and there's somebody outside of us that's here, and perhaps even controlling the show. But these are all things that we have to reach our own decision on. I don't think we're given concrete answers, and that's one thing about UFOs and the paranormal. It's a kind of a cosmic chess game, and it makes you think.
All right, we're going to take our first break.
And boy, do we need that at this day and age.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we are going to talk some about, well, one of the publications that Tim has called UFOs Wicked This Way Comes. The Dark Side of the Ultra-Terrestrials. So what is the dark side, and exactly what does ultra-terrestrials mean? Again, my guest is Mr. UFO. His name is Tim Beckley, and you can go to conspiracyjournal.com if you want to learn more about him and his work. There is a link, of course, at speakingofstrange.com. We'll continue this conversation when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange. When you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down.
Yes, the show. show where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange, I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And you can call Shelley Wright at Wright's Coin Shop. Write this number down, 828-298-5402. Again, that's 828-298-5402. And if you want to visit the website of our guest this hour, go to conspiracyjournal.com, and we'll also have a link for you there at speakingofstrange.com. Mr. UFO, Timothy Green Beckley, an old friend of mine, he and I have had a lot of circles in common, everything from B-movies to every type of paranormal subject you can imagine. I've had the honor of appearing in some of his publications. And, Tim, you are publishing a book here called UFOs, Wicked This Way Comes, The Dark Side of the Ultra-Terrestrials. Now, what are ultra-terrestrials, and what is this dark side?
Okay, well, I prefer not to call what we speak of these occupants in terms of aliens. Well, I'm sure that confuses quite a few people today who would think of aliens as crossing the border illegally from Mexico or wherever, right? And as far as them being extraterrestrial, well, I don't know as if we have any direct proof of that. You know, these guys are here, and you've had a few of them on your show, and they're all very well-meaning, Stephen Greer and other researchers and all that. They're out. They have an agenda, and their agenda is to have the government recognize the existence of extraterrestrials. Well, I don't know if the government, first of all, is not willing to do that. I don't think they will ever do that. It's up to these beings or energies themselves to manifest and let us know if they're prepared to make contact, if they can make contact. I don't think the government is ever going to fess up to this, because they'd have to admit that they've lied to the public for well over half a century. And furthermore, I don't know what evidence that they have. Something did crash at Roswell or Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, but unless the occupants are alive to cross-examine, how do we prove where they come from? And even in the cases where they supposedly have communicated with people, they've lied their booty off. to be honest with you, I mean, I remember in the early days we had the contactees like George Adamski, Orfeo Angelusi, Truman Bethrum, Dan Fry, George Van Tassel, and they all told of meeting fair-haired, blue-eyed beings from the planet Venus and the planet Mars. Well, we know that this is out of the realm of possibility. I mean, unless these beings are living under the surface of these planets, or they exist in some other time dimensional place that we can't put our hands on. We know that there's no life, you know, on the planets in the solar system. So obviously these people either made up these stories, which I don't believe they did, or the occupants themselves were pulling the wool over the eyes of the contactees. So we have no real proof, as far as I'm concerned, that these beings are extraterrestrials. So therefore, I prefer to call them ultra-terrestrials. Now, it's not really a term that I devised. I think John Keel was using it many years before I decided to use it in some of my publications. And as far as the dark side of ufology, well, most of the things that happen, or a good portion of the things that happen, are not of a positive nature. I mean, we do have some people who are channeling blissful messages from outer space, who are warning us to of our faulty use of nuclear energy and so forth, you know, telling us that we should give up our warlike activities and become more peaceful and serene and stop eating meat and become vegetarians. Well, you know the stories. I mean, they're kind of pretty common. These would be the New Age personalities who kind of go along with the sweetness and light, or bliss bunny phenomena, I call it. When in reality, a lot of these stories and encounters involving UFO beings are not very positive. In this book, Wicked, UFOs, Wicked This Way Comes, The Dark Side of Extraterrestrials, We have some material by Dr. Carla Turner, and she investigated any number of abduction experiences, including those of her own family members. And, boy, this is some horrific stuff. I mean, this is just way beyond Travis Walton and some of the other abductees. I mean, it just gets into medical examination and rape and illusionary effects. It's just totally bizarre. And so there is a dark side to ufology, and a lot of people in the field, UFO researchers, they just don't want to acknowledge that. They're just happy to look up into the sky and wait for a cute little ET to come down and share information and knowledge with us. And if it hasn't happened in 50 years, I doubt if it's going to happen anytime soon. So this book, UFOs Wicked, This Way Comes, is part of a series. We also did a book a couple of years ago called Round Trip to Hell in a Flying Saucer. And also, you know, there is a seemingly a connection between UFOs, demons, and the like. In fact, I always say that what happens at a UFO landing site is pretty similar to what takes place inside of a haunted house or at a seance. And there's also a fascination and a link between Nazism, occultism, and German-made flying saucers. Now, it's my feeling that if a UFO did crash, let's say at the Roswell in New Mexico in 1947, it probably was not a space craft. I mean, if these objects are coming here across time and space of, from light years away, I mean, you know, how many light years would it take even to come from the nearest spot in space that could be inhabited? Certainly a bolt of lightning or our radar is not going to knock these craft out of the sky. I do believe that after World War II, the U.S. Government brought over up to 5,000 German or Nazi scientists here who were developing their own technology. Apparently back in the 1920s, there were some mediums in Germany who were actually channeling space people or beings from somewhere else who gave them information on the various modes of anti-gravity and magnetism and so forth, and they developed their own space program. And so this space program has kind of been under lock and key here. There are certain elements, I don't know if you want to call it the New World Order or the Illuminati, that is perhaps controlling this secret society of engineers and scientists who developed some other means of getting into space, and this information is being hidden from the American public. So I think that the crash that landed at Roswell, if it did indeed crash, was not occupied by extraterrestrial beings, but that this was some sort of a German secret device that crashed here. And I've always had this feeling, at least for the last couple of years, that the government, if you have to believe in UFOs, the government would like you to believe that they're from outer space. You shouldn't believe in them, but if you do, they have to come from some other planet. They cannot come closer than, you know, some other solar system or something. And I don't believe that that's the fact. So there is definitely this dark side to ufology that we really don't hear enough about. And perhaps we should become aware of this and learn to protect ourselves.
Okay, we're coming up on our next break here in about a minute, but I want to also dig some when we come back into the phenomenon of the men in black. And I explained in the first hour of the show that you are credited as the person who presumably took the first legitimate photograph of a man in black, a quote-unquote man in black. And you've talked about this on Speaking of Strange before, so we don't need to rehash the whole scenario about how that photo was taken. But what I would like to get is your take on who these men in black are. You know, would these indeed be just government agents who are trying to protect whatever secrets are within the field of ufology, or are we talking about representatives of these other dimensions and these ultra-terrestrials? Because that photograph that that you took, it showing this spooky-looking man standing there wearing a hat and a coat, he looks unnatural. Every time you see that picture, it doesn't look like something that fits naturally into this realm. Folks, I'm talking with Tim Beckley, Mr. UFO. Visit his website, conspiracyjournal.com, and make sure that you are receiving his publication, Conspiracy Journal, Bizarre Bazaar. When we come back, we'll talk about the Men in Black. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
As he went along his way, when all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw. Their brands were still on fire, and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-yi-oh! Their eyes were blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. He's riding hard to catch that herd, but he ain't caught them yet. 'Cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky. All the horses snorting fire as they ride on, hear their cry. As the rider floated on by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways. If they are with us, you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies.
Yes, it's the show where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange, I am Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's program is presented by Wright's Coin Shop, 828-298-5402. You'll find a link at speakingofstrange.com, as well as a link to conspiracyjournal.com, the website of our guest, Mr. UFO, Timothy Green Beckley. So, Tim, you know, one of the most complex and controversial subjects in this phantasmagoria of the paranormal is the phenomenon known as, well, the MIB, the Men in Black. Again, you did take what many consider the first legitimate photograph of a quote-unquote man in black. This was decades ago in New York. What do you think the Men in Black actually are?
Well, I've come to the conclusion, well, some of them may be government agents. You know, they look kind of like FBI types that we see on TV. I think there has been instances where the government has sent agents out to confiscate photographs. I mean, people's homes have been broken into, of course. So telephones have been tapped. So I think that there is a, government, I don't know what agency is sending them out, but even though, for example, in the case in Bentwaters in England, that after our friend Larry Warren and Jim Pennington and John Burroughs and all these other guys had this incident that took place with a landed UFO in the forest outside of Bentwaters Air Force Base, they had a clandestine meeting with the OSI or some other agency that came and really tried to mess up their minds, perhaps giving them sodium pentothal and trying them to direct them in a different direction as far as giving information out. So some of these men in black are government types, but others are not. Now, who or what are they and why are they here? Well, I think that these are Earth people, believe it or not. I don't think that they're extraterrestrials or ultra-terrestrials. I believe that the energies behind these UFOs, the ultra-terrestrials, have the ability to control our minds, and that they have selected weak-willed Earthlings as their zombies, just like in Plan 9 from Outer Space, if you remember that movie, and some of the other films. These are our zombified Earthlings who are actually at the beck and call of these ultra-terrestrials who are trying to guard their secrets. And then after this, it's kind of a race in their memory. They have no memory of ever having done this or being under mental control of these ultra-terrestrials. So I think that there are Earthlings that are just being played with and being utilized for the purposes of these beings that are here to cover up their being on Earth.
Well, you know, nowadays people who are investigating the paranormal, they're running around with EMF meters and Geiger counters and infrared cameras, and yet humans have always been intrigued with the idea of tools, of objects that somehow connect them with other dimensions, often known as sacred objects throughout history. And one of the books that you publish is called The Ark of the Covenant and Other Secret Weapons of the Ancients. Tell us a little about that book and this concept.
Well, you know, now, back in the 1980s, I was invited to speak at a closed session UFO meeting at the House of Lords. My friend was the 8th Earl of Clancarty, Brinsley Laporte Trench, who was the one of the early editors of the very prestigious Flying Saucer Review. Now, he's talking about disclosure. This is back, several decades ago, 3 decades ago. They were trying to get the British government to release its top-secret files on the subject. And they had about 70 or 80 members made up of members of the House of Lords and Parliament, who were pushing for disclosure. Of course, they never got it in those days, although the UK has released quite a bit of information, thousands of files and sighting reports and so forth. But anyway, so I was invited over to speak for this group. And after having made my little presentation, I hopped on a train going to the countryside and decided to spend some time visiting with other people that I had corresponded with or who it was suggested that I meet for one reason or another. Now, I had the opportunity to meet several authors and several researchers, and one of them was a fellow by the name of David Medina. Now, David had spent many years actually sitting there reading the Bible and collecting all the information that he could on the Ark of the Covenant. Now, the movie with Harrison Ford, had just been released, so there was quite a bit of interest in the subject. But the film, of course, was presented as a science fiction movie, and you really didn't know what to believe. So now, David gave me this little manuscript that he had self-published the booklet, and I came back and I read it over, and I said, "Well, geez, this might be of interest to some people because it's written as a archaeological information, not as a science fiction story." So I put out a limited edition of the of this book, God's Secret Weapon, The Ark of the Covenant, and I sold a few hundred copies, nothing spectacular. And then recently, with the popularity of the Ancient Astronauts and the Ancient Alien series on the History Channel 2, I was rereading the manuscript over, and I said, well, geez, you know, this book hasn't been out, this information hasn't been out for 25 years now. Maybe it's a time to re-release it. So I took David's material, and I collected together some other authors, including Brad Steiger and Sean Castile and Olive Phillips and Tim Schwartz, and we put together what I believe is a very good case study of not only just the Ark of the Covenant, but we've come to the conclusion that there were other technologically advanced weapons that were used during this period thousands of years ago. In fact, going back even before the biblical Moses, you know, Moses was the one that supposedly received information on how to build the ark. He was in a cave apparently on Mount Sinai, and God had spoken to him and given him the Ten Commandments, and God told him to build a container that they could carry the Ten Commandments around. And this container, which was the Ark, and the covenant was the Ten Commandments itself, was given supernatural powers so that disbelievers would believe in the almighty power of the Lord. Now, the Ark of the Covenant, supposedly Moses was able to communicate with God. On the top of the lid of the Ark are two angels, and this was a transmitter to the heavens, and so apparently Moses spoke to God on a regular basis. And the ark itself was some sort of electrical generator. Now, some people think that it might have been a nuclear generator, but I wouldn't go quite that far. Now, we do know that the walls of Jericho were brought down, according to the biblical verses. And at that time, the Moses and the priests, who all wore special garments to protect themselves from the energies of the ark, were carrying it around Jericho, and it was at this point that the walls actually came down. So it was able to cause earthquakes, as far as we know, too. Apparently, Moses could create an earthquake by using the ark. And so people were frightened of it, and they were frightened of God, apparently. And we found out that there were other weapons that were being used. If you go back to even further, several thousand years before this, in the books of the Hindu religion, they talk about battles in the sky, and they describe and depict what appear to be some sort of spacecraft or UFO. And in fact, some of them look remarkably similar to the flying saucers of today. And apparently there was a great battle that was created at the time, and many thousands of people were killed by these aerial vessels, which shot down some sort of, laser beams or laser-type devices.
Okay, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, well, we'll be in the final minutes of this hour. We'll wrap up our conversation with Mr. UFO Tim Beckley. And then, of course, after that, we'll have the Dark 30 Hour. And as a matter of fact, Tim supplied me with an interesting tale that I'll share with you guys during the Dark 30 Hour. His website is conspiracyjournal.com. And when we return, we'll find out, just the latest stuff that he's into, what he's interested in, and how you can learn more about it. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. And yes, we are in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. 828-298-5402 is their number. And next hour, well, it's going to be the Dark 30 hour. And that's the hour when we talk about some of the more outrageous and controversial stuff, often more sordid and seedy, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So, you know, stick around if that's your cup of tea. And if not, well, you might want to try us the following hour. Right now, I am talking with Mr. UFO, Timothy Green Beckley. His website is conspiracyjournal.com. And here in the last few minutes of the show, Tim, just tell us in general sort of what you're up to now and places that people can go to learn more about you and your work.
Well, my main interest at the moment, and I planning to do more research into this and do some more shows to discuss the subject, is in the matter of coincidences and synchronicities. I think coincidences are not coincidences, and that synchronicities are sort of planned out for us. You know, the late, great Charles Fort said that we were merely pieces on a cosmic chessboard. And I think that that's the case, that there is somebody out there that is controlling events that are happening in our lives. Now, I don't know how meaningful they are. They're more meaningful to the individuals that they happen to, perhaps than on a worldwide encompassing thing here. It's very bizarre and very weird. And I know in the Dark 30, I told you a story, and you're going to share that with the audience. But I will let you decide how to tell it. It's a little bit too sensitive for me, so I know you will put it in just the right words. I continue to publish. We now have over 200 titles in our archives. In fact, if you want to find out all the goodies we publish, and, you know, we do books on UFOs, we do book on occultism and on magic and on cryptozoology and on giants and some music. If you just go over to Amazon.com and you type in my name, Timothy Beckley, all sorts of wonderful covers will magically appear. And you could order through Amazon or you could order through our conspiracyjournal.com. And I will be out. I also have my own UFO channel now on YouTube. It's called Mr. UFO's Secret Files. And, you know, over the last couple of decades, I've traveled around the country, and I always take my camera with me because I am a filmmaker. And I interview people who have some very strange and unusual and very wondrous stories to tell. So I've always made DVDs of these and VHSs when that, of course, was in fashion, and sent them out with my books. But I decided that now I want to share them with the whole world. So if you go to YouTube and type in Mr. UFO's Secret Files, you'll come up with interviews with Peter Robbins and Antonio Huneas. And, Josh, if you remember, a couple of years ago you were here over in my penthouse apartment in Manhattan, and I did an interview with you on the Brown Mountain Lights and some other strange things, and that will be up there soon at Mr. UFO's Secret Files. So I'm keeping very busy, and my birthday actually is coming up this week, and hopefully as we get older we get more knowledgeable.
Well, you know, I can't tell you enough the gratitude that I have for not only the body of work, but this sort of entire perspective that you embody. You're the emperor of this dazzling, magical empire that is full of this sort of thought-provoking, controversial, and often sort of perplexing sort of perspective or point of view, where all I can tell you is that you're not just cranking out the same old stuff that everybody else is. You're always looking for a new twist, a new angle, and sure enough, when I look at your work and your publications, I get this nostalgic sense. I miss these golden eras that even I never saw in person, but kind of feel like I can live through now. So I really admire all the work that you have done.
Well,
and
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate that coming from you because you are the Gene Shepherd of the airwaves.
and we
did meet under somewhat strange circumstances at a B-movie conference, a film festival, I guess, outside of Syracuse, way outside of Syracuse, I might add. It was in a catering hall where there were somewhat uncomfortable chairs that one had to sit in all day in order to watch these movies, some of which were interesting, including yours, Josh, but some of them, frankly, were not. And so you and I would get up every once in a while and head to get a little fresh air and sit in the bar, which was the only place to go, and perhaps share a beer. And we had a nice conversation about films, but we never touched upon the paranormal. It was not until months later, when I was going through the Internet or reading some literature, that I came across your name and is related to the ghost master of Asheville, North Carolina. And I said to myself, well, I think I met this guy. But, you know, the subject never came up, and you didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who you were. And now we've become cohorts in the macabre.
See, that is synchronicity at its best.
Yes,
all right. Thank you so
indeed.
Much. Everybody, there you have it. Tim Beckley, Mr. UFO. Again, go to his website, conspiracyjournal.com. There is a link at speakingofstrange.com. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it will be time for the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.